absolutely nothing that you've been through in your life will be wasted. Nothing. Every pain, every sacrifice, every failure, every positive, every struggle, nothing will be wasted. You have been given those experiences to turn them around and use them beyond yourself.
Welcome to the Human Advisor Podcast. And today we're a very special show because we don't have our normal host hosting. My name is Jay Swink. I'll be your host. And today we're flipping the script and we're going to be talking with Tyrone Ross Jr., kind of a man I've gotten to know well. Everybody, I think, knows Tyrone. In fact, part of why he's the host of this show is because of the way that he's been willing and vulnerable in sharing his story, who he is, kind of how we got here. But I personally don't know all the details. I've only heard, even just today, I heard a little bit about the first time Tyrone shared his full story. I heard a little bit more about the genesis of this podcast, which actually was kind of a almost a tearjerker for me. And the day this podcast was launched was a really important kind of turning point day in Tyrone's life. So I think it's really, really important that more people, not just in financial advice, but what we're finding in telling this, the stories in the show, is that our audience are sometimes financial advisors. And they're sometimes just people that are in need of financial help, right? They are looking for a financial advisor. The feedback that we get is incredible. And if you're not a regular subscriber, this is your first time, I'll do my host duties by reminding you to go to humanadvisorpodcast.com. Make sure that you sign up to follow the podcast. And since most of our shows are real shows with video and emotions, one of the best ways to participate in the show is via YouTube. So make sure you go to our YouTube channel. And I think as Tyrone says, you got to pound the subscribe button, smash the subscribe button, right? So do those things. So with that big, long intro, I can't wait to dig in. And thank you, Tyrone, for being on this side of the screen to share more about you and your story.
Yeah, absolutely. This is pretty cool. This is a surreal moment. So it's awesome. It's awesome.
Well, good, man. So I'm going to jump in. I'm going to ask, like, hard questions, right? But only hard questions because it's conversations that need to be had and stories that need to be told. There's a lot of change happening in not just financial advice, but just in the world. There's just, you know, rapid change. But I think in our world that we live in, which is this kind of financial advice and financial technology, in many respects, sort of the fast evolution of how financial products get to market and impact people in their lives, It's almost alarming how dehumanized some of this stuff is, even though it very much affects humans, you know? So what I want to know a little bit more about is, again, I know we could talk about crypto and tech and startups. Yeah. That's fun. We'll have those conversations minimally, but I really want to know more about the human level stuff. So just start. You don't have to give us every single detail, but I'd love to know, and I think it's important people know, how you got here. Right. So how did you get into financial advice? And I think it would be sort of stating the obvious, but we both know, we've had conversations about this, that it is not a community that is typically known to be inclusive. It's been a hard community for people of color, for women to be impactful. So it's definitely a road less traveled. And I think there might be certain assumptions people make because this is not a conventional career path. I mean, for a lot of people, but again, especially minorities and women, it's just been, unfortunately, a place that hasn't been accepting. So I would love to know more. And I think people would love to know more about, like, what got you to this place. And I know it was not easy. No. And if you're comfortable sharing some of those struggles you had to go through to get to where you are now.
Man, where to start? It's crazy. One of the things that I've ever kept secret and was reluctant to share was the fact I had never taken a business class. I had never taken a finance class. Like, I wasn't prepped for, you know, this this endeavor to become a financial advisor, be a financial professional at all. It was a circuitous route, right? And one that, again, a lot of strife, a lot of bigotry, a lot of racism, but none of my pedigree is traditional in the sense of how you get here. But I think that's the beauty of this podcast and ultimately advisors telling their stories. Like, there's no direct path to get here. So for me is, I always start with my parents, right? My dad came to this country and met my mother, who was 17, just had my sister, 9-month-old. And my dad came to this country from Guyana and couldn't really read and write well. Told my mother, listen, you help me get a job, I'll help you take care of your daughter. And, 6 years later, I came along, and we weren't taught about money. We weren't taught about the ins and outs of any of that. Like it was a situation where the financial lessons came hard, and it was augmented and exacerbated when I actually ended up on Wall Street. So long story short, again, not to get into the whole story. So I was a communications major. Again, nothing, I guess I communicate now, so the degree is coming into use, but I thank my legs for paying for college. But I had a graduate professor in graduate school who was like, have you ever thought about working on Wall Street? And I was 26, I didn't know what the stock market was, right? I had no idea. So there started this journey that, again, ultimately led me here. But I go onto Wall Street, I literally walk right by the New York Stock Exchange, I have no idea what it is. And I start working at this firm called Financial Dynamics, doing investor relations, and was way over my head. I was a probation officer before that, right? And I always tell the story, I was in the interview, and shout out to Lisa Craddock, who has been instrumental to me being here right now. So Lisa, I appreciate you. She goes, well, tell me how being a juvenile probation officer translates to being an investor relations professional. No idea what my answer was. Don't remember it at all, but she was just so enamored and taken to my desire to want to help, right? To want to do better for my family and I. Because at that point, I was, I was the first one in my family to finish high school, right? First one to go to college, first one to get kicked out of college. So my family had always started to hang on to my accomplishments, right? So that's the struggle of, again, being the one who made it, right? Or being the one who finally starts to see the world. There was a long time in my life where my parents had to be forcefully removed from my life. I remember I needed a tutor, and they couldn't afford a tutor, but I needed one. Because they couldn't help me with basic, the things that I was learning in school. So all of these things started to put me on this path of to where now I tell this story and share it all. But just to tie it up, so I get the job. I've been blessed enough to have so many people pour into me, which is why I'm so big on giving. And there was a gentleman there, Michael Poliviu, who was like, you need to start doing 101s with me just so we can teach you buy side, sell side, what a stock is, what a bond is. And there I started to realize that I was an outcast. I was just being exposed to a world I had no idea that existed. Left there, he mentioned, he was like, you'd be great on the retail side. And I'm like, what's the retail side? Right? And he was like, working with individuals or whatever. So I go to this Wolf of Wall Street chop shop, learn how to cold call 600-700 dials a day. And that's where, again, I started to see another side of the business, because I got there and then I started hearing about the wirehouses. And so there's this route that I ended up. But when I was at that firm, I'll never forget this, because right then, I always say this, as a black male in this country, you'll constantly be reminded of your place. They'll put you in your place. If they feel like you're getting somewhere too fast, or you're not you don't fit the prototypical black male that we see on TV, or that the rapper that my daughter or my son likes. And they were trying to get Under Armour as a client. I was a junior associate, not included in anything that had anything to do with closing an account. And the guy stood up, I won't say his name, even though I should, stood up in the meeting and he goes, Tyrone was an athlete. He was an athletic type. Go get him. And they threw me into this meeting and embarrassed me. I didn't know. I wasn't prepared for that. I'm staring across, right, at some executives from Under Armour, and they only brought me in there because I'm the black. Here's the black athletic guy. Go get him. And at that moment, I realized, I'm like, I get it, right? I'm a pawn. And I've been like that for a while, a bunch of different places. And, so that's kind of how I've gotten to this point, through a lot of hurt, a lot of pain, a lot of personal discovery. Now imagine all of that. You're learning this whole new world, and then you're also learning about money. You're being exposed to people with means for the first time. You're being exposed to the realities of America for the first time. And more importantly, you're being exposed to your weaknesses all at once. So there's this confluence of events that's constantly putting you on a defensive, right? You can't call people and say your name is Tyrone. Tell them you're Tyler, right? You're never going to make it because your type don't do well on Wall Street, right? And then when you do start to have some success, well, you're only having success because you're fair skinned and white people aren't threatened by you. So there's been this whole thing of, you know, a whole, and again, we could spend a couple podcast episodes talking about it, but that's how I got here. So now having fought through that is why I'm such an advocate for the voiceless, for people who don't have a voice, for people who don't feel as though I'll never sit where he is. I'll never be there. I have a responsibility for all I've gone through to talk to those people, to speak for them. My parents, right, who went their whole life unbanked, underbanked. So you get to this point where I have a tremendous responsibility to let people know they're not forgotten.
That's important work. So we should have brought a little tissue box.
Yeah, it's gonna happen.
I'm now that I'm old, I'm more emotional. You know, I used to be accused of being a robot when I was young. You know, but this stuff, this is important. Important conversations to have, and I appreciate you just being like incredibly open.
Yeah.
You know, with people, it's easy sometimes, I think, for society to assume that the people they admire are like invincible and untouchable, and they're so brilliant. And they put people on this pedestal of being really unhuman, right? Like, I mean, in a way that's unrealistic for someone to aspire to be. It's really important that when you have a platform, you have a platform now. I mean, you have. Yeah. People that really look up to you and they follow you. And it's not just financial people, but again, like kids look up to you. You know, your family looks up to you. And now you're getting involved in communities all around the country it's really cool to watch, you know. But all the while, it'd be very easy for you to act like this was, you know, all part of your master plan.
right.
But it wasn't your master plan. You know? So I know that it's... again, not easy. You mentioned a little bit there that they said that Tyrone was the athletic type.
Yeah.
So I would say Tyrone's an athlete. You're still an athlete.
Yeah.
You know?
I try. I do my best.
And while you do a lot of other things too, you're an athlete too. You know, it's part of who you are. You talked about your run, your legs, your running is what got you through college, into college.
Absolutely.
Right? So I know it's a difficult thing for you to talk about, but I think it's important people kind of know a little bit more about that backstory. And so I don't want you to have to relive like everything, but for those who aren't aware, there's such a small percentage of people, of humans, that have the ability to do a sport for a living, right? To make it to the NFL or NBA. In track and field in America, it's an even smaller percentage, really, that are going to make it into certain events.
Yeah.
And especially because, like, the biggest event, the Olympics, only happens every 4 years. And you had really three different times that you were there. Like, and there were circumstances that happened. It's easy, I think, for people to think, well, I knew a guy that was fast in my high school. Listen, there's a difference, you know, there's a really, really big difference between that kid that went to the school and your conference that was fast. Listen, that kid's not Tyrone. But this is where truth, like, it's hard for people to wrap their arms and like their minds around this idea that, like, the smallest fraction of a percentage of people will ever compete in the Olympic Games. And it's even smaller percentage in certain events in the US. And so you were right there.
Yeah.
And I know that was your biggest dream.
Yeah.
And you haven't reached it yet. I still think you're a young guy that's super fast, you know, but I'm an optimist here. But I want to know a little bit more about like this struggle that you have, because I'm sure there's people, when they think about their life, whether again, think about like our audience today, right? It's going to be financial people, non-financial people, tech people, VC people, crypto people, right? It's a lot of people from all different walks of life. We'll have billionaires watching this. We'll have people that are so in debt that they feel hopeless watching this, right?
Yeah.
We all have dreams.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter who we are, where we come from, right? So we have dreams. And there's actually only a small percentage of people that their dreams kind of, they will eventually go away. Like I could say, look, I still want to be whatever, climb Mount Everest. I could still do that.
Right.
But there's things that, like, there are opportunities that they're hard if they go away. So I'd love you just to share and help people understand the struggle when you have something that's like your life dream, the low that can put you at, but then also like, how do you lift up? Because you're lifting up. You're doing actually, I think, the most important work you could be doing right now. You're exactly where you're supposed to be.
Yeah.
But it's probably not where you thought you'd be.
No, not at all. It's funny, whenever I speak, I introduce myself as a three-time failed Olympian. People are like, no, don't say that. But it's the truth. And I identify with failure for that reason. The one thing I worked hardest at in my life, I failed at. And it's a daily struggle. And what I've learned, though, is through that, right, the days when I was grinding in the dark, right, and I talk about this on my Twitter a lot, early in the mornings, late nights, literally pushing myself for something, and I saw that in my mind's eye, it was so vivid, right? At 16 years old, I'm like, I want to do this. And I was just telling Taylor, we were talking, when you come from nothing, you have to attach yourself to something that you think is going to pull you out that circumstance. And he said he didn't have that. And I'm like, I wish, because I was like, if I can do this, it's going to change me and it'll allow me to change my family. So track was something that I didn't want to do. And, you know, shout to Coach Holler. And he forced me into it in high school. And, you know, I did pretty well. And, you know, I was able to get a full scholarship. And when I was done with college, I'm like, I have this dream still. And everyone was like, you could possibly be an Olympian. And I'm like, really, you know, okay. And I just, I went all in, and it's, so the best way I can explain it, looking back at it now, is I have this thing that I talk about, right. And I mentioned on a reps for nothing, right. Your reps for nothing. How many reps did you put in? And all of the time, all of the training, all of the sacrifice, never going anywhere, never having a life, making it a selfless pursuit, now has led me to do the things that I'm doing now. For people to be so into my story. But running for me was an escape. It still is. And what hurts is my dream is never going to come true. And I'm tired of crying about it. I'm tired of crying about it. But you mentioned people watch. I'm a sacrifice for people with no hope. You mentioned how this podcast was birthed. This podcast was born the morning that I was going to commit suicide because I drove myself so hard. And I was spared for this moment to be vulnerable on camera, to let people know there's life beyond selfish pursuits. There's life beyond whatever you wanted for yourself. And the genesis of the question that we ask people on the podcast about what are you most grateful for that never happened to you is me trying to heal myself. I'm wounded, as some of you may be, that's wounded. But what I'm slowly learning is those failures, not living my dream, wasn't for me. And as humans, we're selfish, and learning to give hurts. That's why most people don't do it, because you have to look beyond yourself. But when you're broken, your life is completely shattered and broken, and I'm left with all of these broken pieces. And I have to start to mold a life. And I start to see a me that I don't see in the mirror. It's frightful. So this podcast, the walk and talks, the young men that I mentor, the homeless people that I fight for, the people living in squalor, my dad, who was called some horrible things because he wasn't smart, my mother, who sacrificed her life for my sister and I, the kid growing up in San Diego of affluence who just wants to paint, who just wants to follow his soul, and the parents want him to be an engineer, or the parents want him to, or her to be a lawyer, and that kid just wants to follow their soul. That's why I'm here. That's what these tears are for. That's what this passion is about. And people say, oh, you always fired up. You talk with so much passion because it's bigger than me. It's bigger than me, which is why I feel like on FinTwit, and there's so many people who want to do well, who want to give back, and they get attacked. And we're all human beings, and we're all fighting for something, and we're all fighting life. So, and again, I don't want to get away from your question, but it pains me. It pains me. I don't wish this on anybody, anyone, my worst enemy. I don't wish it on them that their dream never comes true. And when you identify with it so much, and this is a perfect opportunity to clear something up, because somebody trying to come at me on Twitter because I said something on the podcast about the only way I could get people to understand is I made a reference on a podcast to if a parent goes to a room and they raise this child and they love this child and they nurture it, and you go down to the room into that room and then the kid is gone with no reason why. And I don't want to take anything away from parenting. I'm not a parent. And I don't want to ever diminish that because of what my parents and what parents mean to me and what my parents mean to me. But golly, when you are searching for something that you will never find, oh, it's a terrible existence. But when you can turn that passion into purpose, when you can turn it into getting people who have been so hardened towards the disenfranchised, so hardened towards people who don't look like them and walk like them and talk like them, just be more human, just touch people. And that's what I started to realize with this business. I'm like, I can start to use my story to touch people, my clients, because I have a better relationship with them. I'm going to lead with my story. So this is a terrible thing. I struggle. And I'll be completely honest. I sat on the side of my hotel room bed last night. And I had a thought, the sickest, disgusting thought that I struggle with. Because the more you have conversations with someone like yourself, or the more you get around people who are so successful, and they're living their dream, and they're having so much purpose, and you feel like they're using the gifts. I get alone, and I'm like, as you mentioned, I didn't plan any of this. But I know for every rep, for every time I heard the Olympic song, and I saw somebody else living what I worked so hard for, this is what this is for. That's what this came from. So I don't take for granted what God is doing in my life and my purpose. And I realize it's bigger than me. But God, this is a terrible, terrible cross to bear. And I'm just tired. I want this to stop. But to finish, I want whoever's watching this to understand that this is not weakness. This is strength. because all of this pain that I have inside is why I go so hard for you. To all of my mentees, to anyone who's struggling with anything, I am that voice. I'm the voice for change, and I will continue to be, because it's so important for me to realize that all of us deal with something like this alone. And if I'm the sacrifice, right, if I, as my mother would say, if my trial and tribulation, if I'm that, so be it. I'm sorry, I went so far away from your question.
It's okay. Listen.
But, you know, and that's it. And again, I didn't get too much into the journey, but that's just what it was. You know, 04, 08, 2012, I came up short, and it almost cost me my life. But now, look what's come out of it. It's incredible.
Thank you, by the way. It's so there's you know, no pain's given to people that they can't handle.
Right? Yeah.
So you I think there's
preach. My mother. Yeah. Well, she said Jesus in the background.
Yeah. And amen. She's right. But it's a so you're putting a lot of pressure on yourself. I think that it's like my big takeaways when I hear your story. You're a young man. You've got like this huge life, right? That and so much to contribute. I have no doubt that you will find that there's actually what you thought was your purpose is not actually your purpose. It was something that got you ready for what your real purpose is, right?
Yep.
And failure is a weird thing. I failed in a few major things too. I think everybody has. And most people are taught to not talk about it. Don't let anybody, don't show your weakness, right? And because they think it's showing weakness, it's not showing weakness. I've told the story to you about how when we decided we wanted to do a show that embodied the values that were important to altruists, I thought, man, there's a stranger, by the way, who I didn't know. I said, there's this guy, this one person, I think this would be the absolute perfect person to help tell the stories of human advisors and the things that they go through, because these are people, you know, they're not computers, not robots, they're not machines. And we have emotions, we have good days and bad days, we have love and pain, right? Mm-hmm. So there's all these things that you've experienced that have shaped you. And because you're willing to be vulnerable and to admit that, hey, this was a really important, this is what you thought your whole life purpose was, and you're identifying it as being a failure. It's not a failure. I know, easy for me to say.
Yeah.
You're gonna do so many big things. I think everyone now sees that, right? So that's partly why myself and so many people are drawn to being around you and your energy. When you tackle something, an initiative, if you want to put socks on people with cold feet that don't have a home, it's like the world wants to go help you, you know? And so these are gifts that are frankly more rare than running a 44-second 400 meter, right? Because not everybody can lead a revolution, right, of sorts. Not everybody can like lead a tribe, and, and you've been able to do that, and you're gonna do it even bigger and better.
God willing,
I believe that, man. I think you're gonna be doing huge things. So I wanna think about advice you would give people that are struggling right now. Their stories I don't often tell publicly either. I have a son who's bipolar, who has struggled with suicide. And so I've been down that path as the parent, thinking about losing the child.
Yep. Right?
And it's this hopeless feeling. Mm-hmm. And people don't know these things about people. They think sometimes they see someone on, you know, online, or they see a photo of them, read an article about them, they see them on a stage at a conference, and they make the assumption that, man, their life must be so good, but yet there's all these struggles that people go through. The lows of my life, I think, are pretty low, but they're the same, you know, they're different, but the same. We all have our lows.
Of course.
How we decide to pivot from that and find purpose is really powerful. And so I'd love just to get an idea of, there was a divine moment that pulled you away from that ledge, literal ledge, the curb in front of the bus situation, right? But then it was on you. So sometimes you get that divine intervention, and then it's like, okay, you've been given a chance, an opportunity. And then how do you harness that into action? Because right now you're doing a lot of good, you're doing huge, big, important things. And so beyond the work we do here by telling advisor stories and hopefully helping people feel more comfortable with the fact that there are good human advisors that care about them and want to, you know, advance others instead of just themselves. But you're also taking care of people that truly probably feel hopeless, no place to live, people ignoring them, people trying to push them out of their town. You know, so here we're in Venice, California. There's a lot of homelessness here. Most people walk by, they don't pay attention, they don't put any money in the cup, they don't even acknowledge their existence, then they go home and complain about the homelessness. Right, so you're doing things to address that. People are not able to concentrate at school because they don't have a lunch, right? I mean, and you've been down that road. You know how that is, being the child on the other end, that you had someone who was looking out for you.
Absolutely.
You know, so you're finding these places that you can be very purposeful. And if there's someone out there and they're going, hey, how can I find, right, take my divine intervention, turn it into very purposeful living, like what are the things that you do? How can you advise and mentor people to find that change in their own life?
I will say it this way. I think one is, as people know, right, is gratitude, right? To be grateful. And I think purposefully looking at your situation and being grateful for what you have. And I think the other thing I will say is this, and I'm learning this and I think is really important. Nothing, absolutely nothing that you've been through in your life will be wasted. Nothing. Every pain, every sacrifice, every failure, every positive, every struggle, nothing will be wasted. You have been given those experiences to turn them around and use them beyond yourself. And that's what I'm realizing now as I continue to put my life together. Nothing I've been through is wasted, not a single moment. Which leads me to the next point is I saw things that at a very young age that exposed me to pain and hurt, which is why I talk about getting proximate. So being grateful, getting proximate to those in need. And what that means is not looking at a situation or saying, oh, I see it and I'm going to give to this charity, but putting yourself close to that person so I can feel, right? Me telling you the story of my life is different over the phone than you sitting next to me and feeling the moment where I'm going to crack and cry. That's important. Sitting in front of a young man who I chased around as a probation officer and the schools are calling and saying, Johnny, he won't come to school, but when he's here, he smells horribly. What is going on? And they're laughing and making fun of him. And I had to arrest this kid and I put him in the back of a police car and God bless this kid wherever he is. And we drive to the police station. And I said, Johnny, what's going on, man? Why are you, you know, you're beating on your grandmother, you're doing all these things. He said, you want to know why? Because my grandfather and my uncle have been raping me in the basement of my grandmother's house. Proximity. Proximity. These kids that are out in the street and in gangs, you got to understand, most of them, that street is safer and it's cleaner than their own home. When you walked in and seen squalor, right? Someone laying connected to tubes with roaches and rats running around all over them. When you see this, it changes how you give. Getting proximate is important. It makes it grateful, makes you grateful that, you know what? Yes, I had it hard growing up, but it wasn't that, right? When a kid has to join a gang because his mother can't go outside to go to work unless he does it because it's on him. Because the whole family will get killed. Getting proximate to these things, people in need, homeless people. I tell people all the time, the whole appreciate you thing. I was in New York City and I'm walking past, you know, this homeless guy and I always keep money on me for that reason when I'm in a city because I don't ever, my mother would say, don't ever pass people in need. Don't ever pass people in need. And when you give, dismiss yourself from it. It's not your business what they do. In that moment, your goal and you were put in that front of that person to give. When you're done, walk away. Dismiss yourself from it. It's the same thing with being grateful or whatever. You don't look for someone to say thank you. It was just the right thing to do. And it was a hard lesson that my mother taught me with that. So I just can't pass people who are hurting. And I give him some money and I grabbed his hand and I said, I appreciate you. And he started to cry. And he said, people will walk by and toss change at me and money. He said, no one has ever told me they appreciate me. Could you imagine being on the street, no shelter, no food, no family, and appreciation? So you telling me that this person wanted appreciation that goes up the line to a billionaire sitting in $100 million house. That individual wants to feel appreciated. You know why? That's why they're building this fortress of crap around them, so people can get close to them or feel like there's somebody that should be appreciated. And why I double down on it every single time, everywhere I go, I appreciate you because I don't know what you're going through. So I think people, I would encourage people, when I went through that in 2012, 2013, I said, I'm done living for my resume. I want to live for my legacy. And I went all in on giving away. I wrote thank you notes to anybody I could think of who had any part of me getting to where I got. I tried to reach out to women that I was disrespectful to. I reached out to anybody, friends I fell out with, right? And I was like, you know what? My life, if I'm going to heal, I got to start giving it away, right? And which is why I say, because of that, now look, here's this platform. That this was built that day, that moment I decided I need to start giving this away, right? And start making sure people understand the purposeness and thoughtfulness of giving. Just giving with not with anything attached, but just because it's the right thing to do. And in this business, we talk about compounding and all this other stuff. When you give, when you just lead with giving, it's amazing what opens up to you. Doors that would have never been open before, relationships that would have never been, and the people who come in to help you heal. When I walked off of WellStat and we made the announcement of the podcast and you hugged me, you have no idea what that did. Because at that moment, I was thinking about that morning where I'm like, I should be dead. Why am I living? And you could ask anybody. I talk about that because it's different. When someone gives a hug, don't just hug me, give me a hug. Because if I give you a hug, you're gonna let go first. But if I'm just hugging you for, you know what I mean, I'm gonna let go first.
I gave you a real hug, man.
Right, absolutely. You gave me a real hug because in that moment we shared something that was it was you giving me a patch over the scar, which you knew existed, not to an extent, but it was something that we shared together, right? Justin Castelli, kind of the same thing. And again, I don't want to tell a story that's between me and him, but we had one of the first times we actually ever met was a really rough episode for me, but he helps me heal. I would have never met Justin had I did whatever it is I was going to do. Now he's an instrumental part of my life. His family is, right? His wife is. His existence to me is a blessing. He helps me through conversation because he's a giver. He gives himself. He's a family man. He's a superhero, right? He's a family man. He does all this stuff, but he'll take time out to say, hey, man, how are you? Right? And I know he's going through, you know, I don't have a family. I don't have kids. But he checks on me. So I would just tell people to take a moment and stop and just say, what can I do today to let somebody know it's no longer about me? I want my wife. It's no longer about me. My husband. It's no longer about me. I want to pour into you. And then what you realize that compounding, it starts to come back. And the thing is, it may not come through your wife. It may not come through your kids. It may not come through the teacher. It may not come through your coworkers, it may come from a different thing, but that overwhelmness of giving and gratitude and gratefulness and purposefulness and intention starts to dig you out of the ditch that you're in and starts to position you to be able to use your story for good. So those that are out there, I would just encourage you, start to draw in so you can give out, because all of you've been through, again, nothing you've been through will be wasted. Give that to the world because that's why you went through it.
Yeah. And I think a couple of just little takeaways too. I think that never knowing exactly who's going to watch this, I think there's a few things I think that are really critical. So one is when we talk about giving, if you give with the intention of getting something back, that's not really giving, right?
Yep.
So, you know, I think there's a disingenuousness to like giving with an expectation, right? So you should be giving. It's really giving. It's giving once the gift's gone, right? It's giving.
Yep.
And I think the other thing, you know, we've touched a little bit on like struggle. Like we've talked a little bit about, you know, people that reach a low point. And I just think it's important if someone's watching this and they are feeling that way, like please reach out and get help. We're not therapists, but we are both people who I think have been through these really low lows. And there's nobody out there that I'd like to see ever try to go through that without knowing they can reach out and talk to someone who's going to be a good listener and an advocate for them in their future. I think like as we I know we only have a limited amount of time. We're going to have to do, I think, a lot more of these turn the tables episodes because there's so much good that can happen actually out of pain and experiences and, you know, things that would otherwise be lost if we didn't turn them into, again, things like giving and proximity, identifying people who have it worse than we do and realizing that our lowest lows might actually be higher than somebody else's highs. And so, like, the actual game plan to make that happen can be very, very challenging. So I think we have to have more discussions, right? We have to kind of talk about these things openly. I think it's important. It's not also lost on me that, you know, this show, we call it Human Advisor Podcast. And the idea is this human connection to money and financial advice. Mm-hmm. There's so many little things you said as part of your story, but talking about getting access to financial help for people who don't have access to it. So I know you probably have all the statistics, but I believe it's around 40% of America's unbanked, like doesn't even have access to banking accounts. We've talked a lot about on this show the lack of accessibility to financial help from another person. Mm-hmm. So someone who might be struggling with, like, I've got mountains of student loan debt, I don't know what to do. Or I've got three kids at home, I'm working full time, I can't pay my rent and pay for my groceries, right? And like, those are things that you should be able to go and get help on. Financial advice, financial advisors, you know, they typically are only able or willing to help people who have money, right? So it's kind of an ironic thing where sometimes the people who need the help the most can't get access to it. And so that's a really big challenge. That's a big part of like what we talk about and the work that we do is working on. If you had some advice to give to someone who's in that situation, right? They're in this situation, like, I need help with money, but I don't trust anybody. Mm-hmm. I don't trust the bank. I don't trust the credit union. I don't trust any other, you know, people. I don't trust the internet. I don't trust an app. Where can they go to get help? I mean, is there a resource that exists? And that's a bit of a loaded question because there isn't really, right? But I think that there's certainly opportunity to get to make that better, right? To make it more accessible. I'd love to get your thoughts on, like, how can the financial advice community that cares, there's a lot of them that care, get in touch with these people who really, really desperately need the help, but they don't know where to go and how to get access to it.
Yeah. So, man, this is something, again, I'm extremely passionate about, right? You know, roughly 50 million people in this country who are working poor. You get in the southern states, when you look at the amount of there's two things, right? Places that they call banking deserts, right? And in areas that are either unbanked or underbanked, right? 50% of the people in the South Bronx, where I'm going, you know, to speak in a couple of weeks, and I'm fired up about to get to those people and let them know that there are resources. So I think here's the thing, and I think this is also just tying in here, you know, something else that I'm doing is why financial literacy led by financial advisors is so important, because it's always been someone else trying to do it. We know exactly how to address some of those problems. Now, there needs to be an education on how to speak to that demographic, right? To understand that you may have been like my mom, where it's like, it's $20 on Monday, we got to get to the end of the week, right? So there's a couple of things here. One is a lot of those people do know how to budget, right? They do know how to make ends meet, right? My mother will stretch $20 from here to the end of the year. But it's very important to understand, okay, well, advisors need to understand exactly how to address them and listen to them. Listen, right, as we always talk about, and see what the true needs are. The other thing with that demographic is that sometimes they just need to be taught to make more money or be put in positions to earn a little more, because they can make do with what they have. So they need to be empowered and taught ways, right, where here's where, and I always talk about this, right, with especially when I go to the inner city and inner city schools and speak. I take a white piece of paper, I draw a line down the middle. And I, especially when I speak to parents, everything that comes in the house, everything that goes out, if there's a number on the right side, circle that number, we got to figure out what's going on there. If there's a number on the left side, you're doing okay. There's what we would call discretionary, right? Which is essentially just, okay, well, this money has to go to getting, you know, caught up on a bill or something like that. So knowing, and again, those of us that know it personally have to lead the charge. But I think also we have to, I think podcasts like this, but resources, letting people know that they can go to Investopedia, they can go on, you know, online and find good information. And perfect example, right? Cash App announces that they're going to now allow you to buy stock. The piece that they put out about, you know, my first stock, like they did with my, it's brilliant. It's very well done. It's super basic. So I think, again, as an advisor, someone who comes from that background, but also leading the charge, just sometimes I can't do anything about what I don't know. I always say there's two types of ignorance. Ignorance I know and I don't care, or ignorance I just have no clue, right? So I think we have to decipher which of the ignorance it is. But for me, it was just somebody who kind of turned the light on and said, hey, you know about what a stock is, what a bond is? Sometimes it's, you know, my parents had a checking account, a savings account, right? Learning what a credit card is, all of these things. So there is nowhere where you can send people. But I think one of the things that I think needs to start is this. It's going to have to start in the home. One of the things I think is important is that financial education and literacy needs to start in elementary school. Elementary school, not high school. By high school, it's too late. But in an elementary school, and it needs to be woven throughout the curriculum. So if I take a history class, I learn the history of money. If I take a home ec class, I do a budget on groceries, this, that, whatever. If I take a science class, or I take a calculus, or whatever, it's bond math, right? Whatever, right? You start, there's some type of curriculum woven through that about money all the way through. So now by the time I do get to, and then your senior year of high school, there should be SAT prep, which I had to take, and I'm sure they still have. And then there's also FAFSA prep, yeah. Right? Those classes should coexist.
So those never had to borrow money.
Right.
That's what FAFSA is.
Right.
You borrow money to go to college.
You borrow money, absolutely. Yeah, shout to the FAFSA babies. And you know, those had to get it in other ways. So I think there's so many, we just do it backwards in this country because again, our industry, unfortunately, banked on people being ignorant and banked on people not caring and not knowing any better. But that particular demographic, I think they want to know that I smile because my sister texts me and I will introduce my sister to the world at some point. She's so funny and just wild, but she texts me and she was like, should I know about this Cash App thing and stocks? You know how powerful that is, right? And I have, you know, a mentees who will text me and say, oh, what about Acorns? Or what about this one? Like, that's important. And they only get exposed because of me. So we have to understand the importance of our platform and what we expose people to. So again, there's so many ways. It's going to have to start at school. It should start in the home. And it should start. Imagine if financial advisors like lawyers gave up an hour of their time a week to go into schools, to go into juvenile detention centers, to go into whatever, you will go and be heard. And there's been a lot of advisors DM me and say, well, I get told no and this, that, whatever. Start at the schools where you don't want your kids to go. Go to the neighborhood where you didn't want to live there, right? Because they'll never say no. And these are the people that need it the most. But to be very clear, just to make it fair, right? There's lack of financial literacy all the way through, right? What is the stat that 90-something% of all wealth is lost after the second or third generation? It's incredible. So, and again, that starts young. So I think I would just encourage people, again, to, just like everything else, people, when they want to find anything, they want to find a wedding planner, they want to find a good camera guy, they want to find, go through people you know and find someone that is somehow connected to financial services and they kind of start there. And if you don't have those resources, right, and it's incumbent upon us as an industry to make sure that these people know that they have access to me. And that's why I go there. I let them know, you have access to me. You need anything, call me, text me, email me. I will give up my time. I'll stop what I'm doing because it is so important that another child, another family does not experience what I experienced, right? And we can start to compound that by bringing more people to the fold, getting into schools, getting into after school programs, making this information, as you talk passionately about, making it more readily available, you know? And that's what I love about technology is we have to be careful because it is making, for the first time, is making financial services more inclusive, but we have to make sure that with this technology, it's also getting to the people who need it. And that's where I think the gap is right now.
Yeah, and I think just as like a PSA, I would say we have time, I think, for one more question. Yeah. But a little PSA, be careful, obviously, what you find on the internet. Some people,
absolutely.
I think like the last election, the game plan was find people who can be easily convinced of things, right, and give them bad information.
Right.
I mean, that was literally part of the strategy. But, you know, I think that as advisors, if an advisor watching this, think too about what Tyrone's saying in terms of the lack of trust that people have in many advisors. And it's there because it's, in many cases, deserved. And that's a narrative that we have to change. The best way to change that is by making access to the knowledge that you have more accessible and doing it with no strings attached. I think if you're a consumer, right, a person that's watching this and going, boy, okay, decent tips here, but I still don't trust people. I hear you on that too. And kind of what I would say is that we're taught, for whatever reason, not just in this country, but all around the world, people don't talk about money even at home. Right. So before it starts at school, people just don't even talk about money at home. They're taught that, like, having conversations about money, you should never have. And oftentimes when people go, like, bankrupt, it's the people you would have never guessed in a million years they were going to go bankrupt because everything seemed fine.
Right.
And they just, even though they probably knew they needed help, they didn't feel comfortable going and getting the help. So there's a stigma, I guess, about talking about money, but it's a more important, I think, for people to be more open about talking about money, finding people that they can trust. It's not an easy solution, but I think there'll be a lot of progress that can definitely be made. And things like Cash App and other tech tools and the integration of that and people is powerful. So time, I think, for a final question. You know it's coming because it's your question. So tell us about one thing that you're very, I'm going to say one thing because you've already answered this a little bit for me in the past, but tell me about something that you're grateful for that did not work out for you.
Man, so again, the genesis of this question and why I ask it so people know is that, again, it helps me to heal because at some point before I take my final breath, I want to be able to say with strict confidence and security that I am grateful I never became an Olympian. And I can't do that yet. I'm getting closer. But I would have to say when I was at Georgia Tech and I got kicked out the first time and I got accepted back, right? I had to reapply and I got accepted back. And at that moment, I started to realize that I just wasn't prepared for college. Like first generation, I was that guy, look to your left, look to your right. Like I was that person. But I started to realize that I was just in over my head, right? First generation high school graduate, let alone going to college. I didn't know anybody who went to college. It wasn't a thing. Like I literally signed to go to Georgia Tech. I didn't know what Georgia Tech was. I didn't know. But I'm grateful that I didn't finish there. And it took me a long time to get to that point because I was so embarrassed that I didn't graduate from there. And all my friends that did, like one of my teammates went on to be the treasurer at Disney. Like they're all super successful. And again, I struggled really hard with the fact, I'm like, man, I couldn't get this done. I let my family down. I lost a full scholarship. Georgia Tech would have changed my life. And I go there now and shout to Coach Hinzel and everyone at the Georgia Tech Athletic Association. They treat me like family. And I'm so glad that didn't work out because that was the beginning. Again, and that hurt me. And I struggled with that for a while. And the reason why I'm grateful for it is because, again, I was used as an example of the struggle of being first, right? Of being first, the first over the wall and not being prepared. But I can stand in front of a room of kids now who look just like me and tell them, this is what I went through. This is what I suffered through. And here's where I ended up. And I'm not supposed to be where I am. If you get in that circumstance and you come from where I come from and you had the opportunity to actually change your life through college and it didn't work out, But I'm so grateful that it didn't, because it's given me such a story and I've been able to share. And I get so many messages from young men and young women who are like, you know, I'm this close, right? Oh, I did fail, and now I'm doing better. And the other thing is this, and I'm putting this in the atmosphere. I don't know how it's going to work out, but I'm going to give the commencement address at Georgia Tech one day, and I'm going to rip the roof off that place with my story. And it is going to change every single person that sits in that auditorium. It's going to happen. And the other thing is, my goal is to create an endowment there for first generation high school students who are not only, you know, athletes, but especially first generation high school black males who are, you know, athletes. So I'm working hard, and I'm actually leaving California to go to Georgia Tech and meet with them about that. And the fact that they're even entertaining it from a failure, right, from someone who flunked out, is awesome. So I'm glad that never worked out.
Well, I'd say it worked out exactly as it's supposed to work out, man. I just got to say, this is a pretty surreal thing for me to be here and interview you. And I wore the hat, you know, I was telling people earlier, I could kind of duck out and like then a quick whisk away a tear when the camera's not rolling, you know. But these are moving stories. I mean, to sit next to you, I can imagine, you know, to be in front of a group of, you know, what is it going to be, you know, 5,000 grads giving that commencement speech, right? It's going to be extra powerful, but it moves me sitting, you know, a foot away. So I just want to say thank you. It's been awesome getting to work with you so far. I think we have so much more work to be done. I mean, just 100%. Having this conversation 100%. Motivates me to say, man, we've just got mountains to move to make not just, you know, financial advice better, but just to create opportunities that should exist for people to better their lives, whether or not they use it to invest money or not, right? Just to improve their life situation. I think there's just a lot of important work to be done. So thank you.
Thank you. And I don't want to go without saying thank you. I appreciate you for giving me this platform, for allowing me to share, because I always talk about the power of an image. The power of an image, and my clients that reach out to see a black man in this position, my mentees, all of the young black boys in this country, right? 80%+ at 9 years old that don't read at level, to see me, I'm always careful of the imagery. So thank you, because I always say this, whenever I'm put in these positions, it's bigger than me. There's thousands and millions who are looking at me as, oh my God, I can do that. That's something that goes way beyond what you, what Joe, what the whole team here could ever imagine, to have a camera on me and for me able to look into this camera, into the eyes of a young man somewhere or a young woman somewhere, and say, it's in you. Persevere, endure, don't quit, keep fighting, stand up, stay tall, live your truth through thick, through thin, and ultimately, nothing you've been through will be wasted. Well, I appreciate you, sir.
Thank you. Get in here.
This was another episode of the Human Advisor Podcast. Visit humanadvisorpodcast.com for new episodes. And be sure to check out altruist.com to learn more about the first ever fully integrated digital brokerage platform for fiduciary financial advisors. No commissions, no fees, and no biases. The way it should be.